You're listening to the Hammersley Brothers podcast. If you'd like to get started with three of our best tools, see the link in the show notes. They're free and video training is included.
Hello and welcome to the Hammersley Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, we're going to put all the dominoes together and go through a couple of case studies where we use the dominoes to scale the revenue of an e-commerce site. So let's get started. Hello, Ian. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, my brother. I'm okay. Yeah. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Good. Ready for another exciting podcast where we go through into the depths of e-commerce and come out with some hopefully interesting facts to help people along their way. So, yeah. A little recap. We did the how many dominoes? Six dominoes of e-commerce we did, and everybody was asking where number four was, but we did the three and four together, I think. So it was five podcasts in all, and it was basically going through all the aspects to an e-commerce sale. So effectively, you thought today we would go through some examples of some of the larger companies who've grown from small to big companies who we'd effectively use the dominoes on and talk you through them. What do you think, Ian?
Yes, I think that sounds like a good idea. I'm surprised you can't remember how many dominoes there are because we've actually got it written right in front of us. They're there right in front of you. You still can't remember that there's six.
Yeah. Well, the book we wrote had seven unexpected KPIs, and now we've only got six dominoes. So, you know, what's been going on? It's in fact,
other things besides the dominoes, isn't there?
Yeah, well, the book came out a while back, and I've just been rewriting a new edition for it. And actually changed one of the KPIs completely to a new KPI. I won't tell you what it is yet, but it's one of the KPIs that we found to be really, really big. It's one of the ones we've been using to actually really grow e-commerce sites. And I was like, that's so important, actually is more important than that KPI now. So. It's data capture. The data capture rate wasn't really one of the KPIs before. It was actually site speed. And I think site speed, yes, is still important, but as people have moved to shops like Shopify and hosted services, it's not like where we were in 2018 when I originally wrote the book, when everybody was hosting their own site and it was all about servers and load server clusters
stuff. 2018, it was almost, we were still in that technological race, like who could get online the fastest and then who could have the best website and, you know, who could have the fastest website and then, you know, who could have the prettiest website. And now it isn't a technological race because really everybody's got the same tools. I was laughing because you've muted yourself when you sneezed.
I know.
People see this now because it'll be on YouTube.
Yeah. So on videos, isn't it?
You should have kept
the video.
Yeah. But it's no longer a technological race.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's moved on a bit.
I mean, it's obviously a changing landscape. You know, since when I wrote the book in 2018, it's completely different. And I did do another update edition in 2022. So the book has been updated since then. But this is much more of a bigger update to the book, which is needed because it's moving quite quickly. And also, a lot of the areas we're seeing growth. You could grow an e-commerce site so much faster than you could in 2018 now. If you get things right, it's like, you know, like the fastest billionaires used to be take 100 years or something ridiculous. And now it takes, you know, the quickest billionaire during the crypto boom was something like about 6 months or something ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
So everything's
changing. But you know what I put changing. That down to? I personally put that down to the growth of no code. So like the software, being able to do, like Shopify is a great example of no code. And, you know, probably things like Klaviyo and things like that, but being able to integrate into stuff like Shopify, you know, integrating into like an ERP system or Klaviyo or MailChimp, it's like seconds, literally seconds. And you don't need really expensive developers. You don't need sysadmins. You don't need QA testers. You know, you could do incredibly sophisticated things in an afternoon that would have taken you weeks and weeks of faffing around with where the technology was in e-com. And, you know, yeah. 5 years ago, and it's just getting better and better and better, especially with like yeah. AI coming along. Like oh, some of the stuff, it is incredible.
Yeah, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, so it's not a technological race as it was when
you know
when
what
we
makes
wrote the
me
book,
laugh
much
is when people,
more about the dominoes.
When people loan, no, they but when they no, well, they moan about Shopify like being difficult and like they can't get things, you know, they can't work things out, and I'm like, God, you should have been doing this in, you know, 10 years ago. It was like treacle. Like just to get anything, it's like, oh, wouldn't it be really nice if we had like an one-step payment check on the checkout? It's like, okay, yeah, we'll have to sit down for 6 months, plan it out, get the developers involved, talk to the banks. But, you know, it was just everything. Everything was completely crazy. So it's a different world now. Anyway, we thought we'd talk through the dominoes of we've got five successes. So we're going to talk through what we thought we'd do is we wouldn't mention the specific company name, because if we actually talk specifically about the brand name of the company, we can't go into detail as much as we probably want to. So for the confidentiality of the client, we thought we'd talk through the process without actually mentioning this specific company, but we'll give you an idea of who they are so it can help you along the way. Anything you want to talk about before we start, Ian, on the first one?
Well, only our internal conversation before. So the dominoes are really our go-to to get the conversion rate up and to try to get more return out of the current ad spend. It's not the only thing. So some of the stories we're going to talk about today, we had to change the maths as well. So we had to change, average order value and margin and lifetime customer value. But each e-com business the ones we've really scaled and the kind of nice sort of fun stories, they've all gone through the dominoes. Going back over the years, looking back, it was consistently looking at the dominoes that actually got us the growth, even though we didn't call them the six dominoes of e-commerce like, you know, a few years ago. No, I think we should just crack in. Let's just go. Let's just talk. I mean, do you want me to tell you what the dominoes were again? Or should we just go through?
Well, let's go through them, because I think that if people have missed the other podcast, they can rewind back and we'll talk about which one we're on and why. The first one is and we've worked with quite a few menswear companies over the years, and we scale quite a few of them. So this is kind of like an amalgamation of the process. Now we've got one in mind particularly, but the first domino, this was menswear, first domino was a busy restaurant positioning. So why don't you talk through what we did to make sure when someone came to the menswear site that the busy restaurant test was correct and the positioning was correct?
Well, a couple of things was, as a point of difference, we added some of the history of the brand. So underneath the logo, we had history, because this particular company had been going for like over 100 years, lots and lots of history. And we added this little strapline underneath the logo that talked about how long they'd been in business, which was like well over 100 years. And we added some Trustpilot review stars high up in the fold so you could see it on any page. So that was the first domino, which...
Yeah,
quite straightforward.
We should probably talk about also, you know, because it's like where they were in terms of revenue when they first started working with us, and where they were with the revenue, kind of like, you know, now.
Yeah,
because it gives an idea of the growth.
Yeah, when we first met them, they were doing literally trying to get past 250k a year. So they were about £250,000 a year, and they've been doing that for about two years. They've been bubbling along. So that and now. They're doing, and they've gone and just gone. They've gone into America, and they've actually gone back and got their own stores now. But all things considered, they'll be doing about 18 million, knocking on 20 million.
Awesome.
Now. That's a nice story,
Yeah, I just thought if people knew the growth, then they'd be more interested in what they did, and
so
therefore they'd lean in a bit.
Mentioned that before.
Yeah, and so what about the busy restaurant test? It was the history of the brand and also Trustpilot, making sure people realized that this was a site that lots of people bought from. Because even if you're doing 20 million, a lot of people won't have heard of you. It's just, it's still not big. It's still not big. Okay. Yeah. So next domino is the navigational flow. So how did you make sure that people found what they were looking for?
Yeah. Well, like most people, this business was quite driven by Google Shopping and search ads. So if you're landing on a particular page, and let's say it's a, you know, pair of trousers or a, you know, a shirt, maybe a better example, you're not going to buy the first shirt you land on. You're not going to buy the first pair of trousers you land on. You might want to have a look around other colours of products, similar styles. And that was very simple. So two things: made the breadcrumbs really clear on the mobile, on the product page. And also, I remember testing the Google Shopping landing page where you could, it was like a kind of hybrid between a product and a category page where you saw the product that you clicked on for Google Shopping, but underneath it was like a category page that had lots of similar products that were the same color and the same style. And that was just to reduce the bounce rate to help people find the right product.
So it was a very different product page for Google Shopping traffic than it was for normal traffic on the website. Because we realized that people on Google Shopping were in a different kind of buying stage to people who would naturally find the product page on the website.
Because effectively that was the real stat. The Google Shopping landing page, the bounce rate of Google Shopping was like 85%. And so you're like, right, this is a war on bounce. We've got to reduce that bounce rate to get the ad to basket up. You know, it was like, you get the ad to basket up, it's purely about reducing bounce. And so how do you do that? Well, you know, you have to make it a much better page where they land. So it's a starting page. It's like the product page, it's like the new home page. That's where they're landing. So that has to be the entry point. So you have lots of places they can jump off. And that's what it did. And they had a great ad to basket, actually. And it fluctuated. But the thing is, as soon as we get a higher ad to basket, we're going to put it under more pressure. You know, like that business, you know, if you look at the conversion rate over the years from when it started, it never, until now, like 250,000 a year, you know, nearly 20 million a year, conversion rate's pretty much the same all the way through.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to say, but essentially what's happened is we've increased the traffic considerably, but at the same time, we've improved it so that we've got a higher conversion rate. Now we can afford to buy more traffic. Anyway,
yeah,
that's
because obviously as
topic.
you're talking about the amount of traffic coming to the site, it's going to be phenomenally larger than the very kind of close, high converting traffic you could buy at that level compared to what we've got to go after now. We've got to go after very, very cold traffic. We've never heard of them, who aren't as interested in buying something as the traffic they were going after before.
Yeah.
So each time we have to convince more people. So effectively, to actually increase the conversion rate. But overall, it looks like it's staying the same.
Yeah, because your traffic has gone up from, 20,000 a month to like nearly a million a month and beyond. And so has the paid budget. I mean, the paid budget's gone from like nothing to like £200,000 a month, you know. So obviously the site's under a lot more pressure to maintain conversion rate all the way through pretty much is quite phenomenal, really.
And also, the competition you're coming up against is completely different than when you're at that level. You know, you start off coming again up against the little niche people, like when you're competing on an elasticated pair of trousers. You know, that not many people are selling those, and you're just kind of competing with those. So now you're knocking on, you're competing with Marks and Spencers and all the big brands. It's a completely different battlefield, really, isn't it? So the next domino is the job to be done. And I think this is particularly important for menswear and women's clothing. But men tend to be more pragmatic about what they're buying. So the job to be done, they quite like to see evidence of it. Yet, how they actually did the job to be done would prove that men are very emotional in the way they buy. So why don't you talk through that?
Well, first of all, nobody is going to buy... I mean, there are some small demographics, and you may have just said the only one, which is elasticated men's trousers, but that's a very, very small market. Well done, Mark, for finding the only fashion item that is not related to fashion at all. But the majority of fashion is they do care about the way it looks. If I'm running a fashion brand and I'm looking at the two dominoes, which is neck, which is job to be done and anxiety reducing, I'm going to lean more heavily into the job to be done, particularly for women's clothing. But certainly for men, I think that's what you were saying before, there's a little bit more of a rational problem-solving nature to the men's clothing, I think, if I could stereotype.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of men's clothing that sell to men like me who are like, I want practical men's walking trousers with pockets and like the best material and stuff like that. Whereas there's some other men that want to, like, you know, an Italian jumper.
But a sports clothing is a different type of fashion retailing. Sports
That's all I wear, though, Ian, because I'm such a sportsman.
Oh, if only they knew. If only they could see you. Yeah. I always beat you at table tennis. That was the height of our sport. What was it? When I beat you when I was 11?
You won once, and you had to ring your grandma to tell her.
I did. It's the best day of my life.
Anyway, tell them how they overcame.
I've never played again. So
the job to be done.
Okay, so the job to be done with fashion is you have to lean more into the job to be done, which is what people want. And what do they want? They want to feel desirable. They want to look good. So you can't sell normally. You can't sell some fashion if it looks crap. So things like we learned that the model had to be 10 years younger than you were. So if we were selling to 60-year-old, the model had to be 50-year-old. So things like that. So, you know, they wanted to feel younger. They wanted to look like the guy in the photo shoot. It had to be, you know, similar to them, but a better version of them. And over the years, the photo shoots just got better and better and better. And as the brand got bigger, you know, we were able to then say, look, go to the south of France and go to, you know, the Riviera and go and take an E-type Jag and go and get a, you know, a beautiful speedboat and all these kind of things. And essentially, the photography just kept stepping up. And it just went up a notch. And because what we were trying to sell was the desirability. And it came out in the photography. So the photography was make or break. And so without that, you know, it was a lot harder to sell. And so, you know, like,
we actually did some split tests, didn't we?
Your famous one where the split.
On the category page.
Where you got the model to look at the call to the offer, which.
No, we did split tests on that, but I was more thinking about the split test on the category page to see whether or not we needed so many lifestyle images, to see whether mannequin shots or whether like lifestyle shots or the clothing lying on the ground was better. And it was the lifestyle shots that really, really converted a lot higher, which is obviously unfortunate for the company because those photo shoots cost a lot of money. But it was a clear winner, wasn't it?
Exactly. And it just became really obvious that it was certainly, that was the job to do. And then the anxiety was once you'd built up the job to be done, really
this
highly.
This is the anxiety domino, by the way.
Yeah, this is an anxiety domino. Yeah. Then you know, it's about what they're anxious about. And now with clothing, it's fit. You know, what doesn't fit? There was a little bit about quality, but mainly it's fit. And so that's why we did the 60-day no-quibble fit guarantee. You know, that you could take it, you could buy it, you could try it on at home, it didn't fit, it was 60-day no quibbles. And that was very, very clear. That was everywhere.
Well there's two aspects to it.
Product post.
Yeah, there's two aspects to it. So first of all, it's like, even if you buying something online and you see you've got a really good returns policy, nobody wants to go through the hassles of actually returning something. So increasing the confidence that it's going to fit in the first place is really important. And then once they feel like they've got the confidence it's going to fit, is the fact that if it doesn't fit, they can send it back easily. So it's like kind of two-step process. So it's not just the returns policy, is it? It's actually kind of like reducing the two anxieties of it, effectively.
Well, it's the perception. I mean, it's all the perception, isn't it? The perception of ease. You know. And whereas I think for men's fashion, we would lean into the returns policy more. But for women's fashion, often it's much more about the job to be done, much more about the desirability. I know we're going to talk about our little women's clothing brand a bit later if we have time. Maybe I'd split it into two.
Yeah, see how we go.
Generally, I mean, we always felt that, and we knew that we got more out of conversion with the 60-day no-quibble because we tested it. We had it on the near the out-of-basket button. We tested the conversion with and conversion without, and it just became a, like, I mean, the ads basket was increased. I think it went up by like 15%, something like that. And there was no difference to returns. You know, people were unhappy. They returned it. regardless of really what the returns policy was. And also, they did return it. They returned it quite quickly.
People don't want to return it unless they have to. It's just pain, particularly men. Like, women return women's clothing a lot higher. But me, unless it's really expensive, I'll just throw it away. I don't want to return it. What? I don't want the hassle of it. I know.
What about sustainability?
No,
your answer should have been that you'll put up with size 13 shoes.
To be honest,
when you're
I won't throw it
nine.
Away. I'll keep it in my wardrobe for a long enough period where I can then decide to throw it away because I feel like it's been in the wardrobe for long enough. That's probably what I would do.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't tell my wife that.
Yeah.
Trust and credibility, the domino trust and credibility. So what about that one?
Yeah. Well, I won't read out what we wrote before because there's a swear word in it.
Yeah.
F-U-C-K loads of reviews. But that was our own internal notes. But yes, it was cherry-picking reviews that hit the job to be done and the anxiety. So the job to be done was, oh my God, I've just had I've just gone to my son's wedding and I just felt amazing. Everyone complimented me on my amazing suit. And the anxiety was, I can't believe how well it fits. You know, so it was picking reviews that hit the job. I mean, certainly that is it with trust and credibility. It's not just showing trust and credibility. Yeah. It's reinforcing the job to be done.
And once you get to a decent size as well, and you're on the product page and you see that, like, there's been 20,000 reviews on that product, you know, that does help as well. That does help when you get to that point. Obviously, not everybody can say that, but at the you know, once you get to that point, and you can talk about your size, and your size does help. So, it does help the rest, the trust and credibility. But it's always about picking out the reviews that people want to see and work. And then the last domino is the offer. So the offer. I mean, it was a big part of it. Actually, we were always testing the offer, like different offers. All around,
and it
changed. We even gave away a free holiday at one point, I think.
It changed over time. Mm. I mean, it started off with like a strong recruitment offer, which I think was 40% off. You know, it was a really, really strong recruitment offer, and I think the retention offer was 40% off as well. And then that was really quite consistent for the business until they got to about 10. Not, you know, just getting past 10 million. And then they softened it a little and it became more about the multi-buy. So there was still always a very strong recruitment offer, but what we decided to do was to try to get the average order value up as well. So the offer was tied to a multi-buy, which is what happened. So the other thing we learned with men's tailoring, men's clothing, on selling men's clothes online, is that people buy the same thing multiple times. So, you know, you think, oh, they're going to buy the matching outfit. They're going to buy these pair of trousers with this shirt, with this belt, with this pair of shoes. No, they just want the same pair of trousers again, or the same navy blue jumper again, or the same, you know, shirt again. And so when you spot those trends, you make that easier to happen and you encourage it and you get more out of it. So that's where the offer architecture changed. It was always a strong offer that was time bound. It was always going to end. And it was always clear that it was a first time offer and an existing offer. But it did change to be an AOV push. And the average order value, you know, was generally buy the same thing again.
Or just looking for something that was just going to increase categories. The average order value, which increases the ROAS, which allows us to have a higher cost to collect and to get the profitability on the order is effectively what we're always looking for in that case. So. Yeah. That's the menswear one. So why don't we talk about an aftermarket car one? Is that what you were going to do?
Yeah, we'll do that. I'm just going to say the net effect of doing all of that. It wasn't something that we know the $6. We did that continually over the period of many years actually.
Mm.
And each time we got to a point where we could no longer buy the traffic profitably, so we couldn't get out any more out of ads. We went back into these dominoes and pushed each one harder, which of course got the conversion rate up, and then that allows us to scale. So it wasn't something that we did one and then forgot. It was a continual process. And in fact, that business now is now just embarking on a new big push of conversion rate, and it will be coming from the same things. It'll be coming from the same dominoes, leaning into each one of these because we know that's what people care about. So that was something. Yeah, we talk about the big car brand, car parts retailer.
Yeah, so it's kind of like aftermarket parts for cars. Aftermarket areas.
Yeah.
And I was just going to say, we've worked with a lot of aftermarket things. I think that's because you were really interested in cars when you were younger. So early doors.
Love it.
Well, early doors. I mean, this, we're not going to talk about TMD Friction, but the first one we had was TMD Friction, which was like no one had ever heard of, but they were huge all around the world. We worked with loads of aftermarket stuff for some reason. And I think you just, you like cars. And that's why it was a big thing for you. I didn't understand anything about it. I did build a car once, but hated it. Anyway, moving on.
You did. I love it. My favorite thing to do is sit in a freezing cold garage in the middle of the UK and change the brake discs.
Here's an embarrassing question for you. How many cars have you got now?
Well, I have a tendency to buy old crap cars.
Answer the question.
A few.
Yeah.
But they're all crap. I don't know.
You got.
Why are you asking me this question?
Just interested.
Do you want to tell me what I've got? I've got five.
Because it'll get you started on your old cars, and subject to the podcast.
We've just turned off.
Aftermarket car brand. So basically,
car brand. It was car parts.
Oh, yeah.
It was new parts for, so brake discs, service kits, air filters, those kind of things, clutches and things like that. So. Yeah.
So how much were they doing online before they started working with us? And how much are they doing online now?
They were doing, the journey of it, they were doing zero online, completely zero.
Weren't they doing eBay? And then, they were doing some eBay though, weren't they?
They were doing eBay, I think probably about $500,000, something like that, maybe a little bit more. Yeah. And we launched as a kind of beta, got it to about $3 million. In about, I think it was about 8 months. And then it got stuck. And they couldn't get past 3 million for about a year. Because it was purely a transaction. It was like just an online catalogue. And it was then, and this was quite a well-known, it was quite a well-known brand. I mean, so now from that moment when they got to about 3 million, they're now doing about 70 million. And we'll hit the 100 million mark soon, in the next probably year, because they're growing really, really quick. And essentially, it was quite straightforward. And we could skip the first domino, really, because everybody knew who they were. So we didn't really have to bother about the busy restaurant test, the positioning.
Yeah, it's like, we've seen these on the high street.
I think other than what people were obsessed with was price and availability and who had it in stock. And who could get it to them the quickest was the one to win. So if you were landing on a site, stressed problem solving purchase to start off with, very short buying time. It was about solving a problem, getting in, getting out. If you needed to feel like you were going to find that it was worth searching for the part. So I think the strap line of positioning was like always in stock, always next day. I think it was that type of thing. And so that's what we led with, was this always in stock, always next day. Because that's what people wanted. And actually, people wanted it same day, actually. But that was just that. It was validating that. And then the second domino, which was navigational flow, helping people find the right part. That was massive, that people couldn't find the right part. Where they would land on a particular page and they would go, well, is this the right brake disc for me? I don't know. Like, I've got a car. When there's like 50,000 different brake discs and 80,000 different parts, they needed to have the reassurance of putting the vehicle reg in. So a couple of things made mini home pages for each category of product, so like one for braking, one for service kits, one for air kits, and then making it so that it was very obvious that you could put your vehicle in, which was your registration number or doing the drop downs. So that was the absolute key. But making sure it worked on mobile, because it was like just nightmare to navigate. So it was
a lot of work with common sense with the Google shopping, because I had to match what people search for on Google with what we had on the store. So like, a brake pad ABC123 might fit 20 different cars, but that's not what people search for. People search on Google for Ford Mondeo brake pad, but they don't tell me the year of the car or the whether it's hatchback or not, whether it's diesel. So it's very difficult to know exactly which one.
So this was for car parts, but it's the same for anything. It's the same for like fridge parts, you know, for, you know, plumbing part, bathroom part. There's all sorts of, things that whenever it's sort of a problem solving rational purchase, they are anxious about the job to be done. Actually, moving on to the third domino, job to be done is that this fits your car. Like it's going to fit your car. That's what they want.
And you're
going to
get it tomorrow. You're going to get it next day.
And the anxiety is, will it arrive? And what if it doesn't fit? Mm. And that's it. So this fits your car was very much pushed, guaranteed to fit. We got in trouble because something happened where the part didn't fit the car. And I think it was something. And they put it in the gearbox and the gearbox broke. Anyway,
well, I think that happens all the time. You're always going to get something slip through the cracks. So someone who buys a part and they think it's going to fit their car, even though it says this doesn't fit your car. So that's the difficulty. Yeah. But you can obviously limit it down by making sure that people actually enter their registration number before they check out, and it says this is the car it's going to fit, and all those kind of things.
And there's loads of examples. Honest, working. Yeah, we're just saying there's lots of examples of where people are trying to find something to solve a problem, like working with a company that's selling gates,
bollards.
And bollards and things like that. And I wasn't going to say bollards, but I will say bollards, but things like that. And it's like people don't know what they want. Like, so they're landing on our bollard and going, is this the right bollard for you? Like, that's what they need. That's the navigational flow. And then when they land on the right bollard, it says, this is guaranteed to be to be suitable for your outdoor office car park. Like giving them that reassurance, and that falls into the anxiety as well. And I remember for the car part company, we made it very, very clear that there was a 365-day returns policy. Mm. But we didn't. The returns policy was a bit crap. But the perception, like the reality, was you had to take it to the branch and try and return it. And often it would be the wrong branch that you'd bought it from. And it would be a really quite naff experience. However, the perception of it was really easy. The perception was a 365-day return. But yeah, I think it had to be in the box. I don't think you could have opened it. Like, there was all sorts of caveats to it. But we, from our econ perspective, could see that it was a real strong message. So anyway, that's what we led with, was this 365 day return. Mm. Well,
and what was interesting is once we'd done all that work on the navigational flow, the anxiety, the job to be done, the Google shopping changes and getting all the stuff, like really it was like a tidal wave that happened when we got the offer right. It was only when we put the offer on top of that, we went from something like, about 200 grand a month to next month doing over $1 million for the first time. It was just like light and day, wasn't it, once we did that? And
That was the biggest. And it was, the offer was tied to the length of time it took to buy. If people, and it was a daily offer. I mean, the offer essentially changed itself every day. Very, very clear, right in the header. We put the prices up, to be able to afford to do it. And it was with a coupon, and it, essentially ended at midnight. And because that was tight, like people were coming on buying a set of brake pads, like they needed it quick. They weren't interested in an offer that was going to end in months' time. So it was very time bound. And it was a big, exciting, juicy offer that was like bright yellow. And it was night and day. I mean, it was literally. Mm. I mean, it more than doubled conversion rate. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird.
It was kind of weird because there was so much pushback across different people, and it was only once the e-commerce manager that was pushing back left the company that we were able to implement some of the stuff we wanted to do, and that was when we actually took off.
Yeah,
because
you're absolutely right, and we've never talked about that. Actually, there was a lot of internal worry about doing a strong offer, a lot of worry, and I think it was unjust, really, because it's car parts. It wasn't a super sexy brand. It was literally like, we have got biggest range of car parts in stock for the best price available tomorrow. Like, it was about, that was the message. Yeah, and that, yeah, the marketing manager,
it's effectively
left.
Changing price
and
perception.
We had free reign.
Price perception is key in that market. It's perception of price that's more important than actual price a lot of the time. And so, yeah, so there's a certain things in there that just really rocketed that company, which is great. Okay, so I think we'll do one more, and then we'll continue with, you don't want to do one more. You want to do lots more.
Well, we'll do one more, but I thought that was good. We're in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
If people want to do one more.
Oh, you want to finish there? I mean, want to finish there? We'll do the next.
Well, we've got 40 minutes. Yeah. I mean, we can. Yeah. Like.
Or why don't we do
spread it out next week?
Well, let's do the next three next week then. That sounds great, because that's now we haven't got to organize it.
I mean, it's glad that we're aligned and that we discuss these things and, you know, in advance.
Well, we said we'd have how many we'd get through, because those two are quite big. Because I want to talk about one with cosmetics that we've grown, and I want to talk about women's clothing one. I want to talk about a gifting one. So we'll talk about those next episode. And we'll go through the dominoes. And in between that, if you haven't listened to the dominoes podcast, try and listen to some of them if you can. And then you'll get an idea of what we're talking about, why we're going through those dominoes. The thing is, when we did these companies ourselves, we didn't know we were going through the dominoes. But the thing is, when you're doing it, you don't necessarily know you're going to have to teach it. Now we're teaching it. It's different. We have to actually put it into a framework. You know, you can go in and do these things, and you know, you just do it over and over and over, and you just don't really realize what you're doing. But when you actually start explaining it to people, you go, "Well, actually, I'm doing that because that's in this part of the business, and that's in this part of the business, and that's why I'm doing it." And I think that's what has happened to us over the past. You know, we've been teaching probably for about 3 years now, and it's basically started to kind of allow us to formulate these things into. Yeah, well. So
3 years. Good. Where have you been for the last 23?
Well, no, we've been working in e-commerce, but I don't think we've been teaching. Or, well, like I certainly haven't been doing online mentoring. So,
yeah,
I certainly haven't had blue lights on a podcast.
I know, but also I'm sat in not in my normal studio. I do feel like sound like I'm in the toilet, but. What's happened, you know, this, you know, the professionalness of our podcasting. My daughter rang me up from school, said that she was sick, and she wanted to.
You haven't got your fake. You haven't got your fake things or your farty leather chairs this week.
Well, exactly.
Yeah,
my daughter's not sick, by the way. She's completely making it up. But we've had to lie to her sister, because otherwise her sister will be jealous, and she'll do the same trick tomorrow. So
you're just confident that they find our podcast so boring they won't get this far into it.
Definitely no chance that our children will listen to the podcast. It's like torture. You put it on in the car and they're like desperate to get out.
Yeah. All right. And on that exciting note, we shall see you next week. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.